Access number 29065, Mr. Michael White, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. White?
I was born on May the 8th, 1932. I was born in the town of Kettering, which was a market town in those days in Northamptonshire.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
I was born from a family of six children. I have got an elder brother, an elder sister, and I was about in the middle. And then I've got a sister and two younger brothers. We're all still alive, and we're all coming about the 70 year of age.
And what did your parents do for a living? Tell us a bit about your parents.
My father was Northamptonshire at that time was all to do with boots and shoes and all the leather trades and what have you. And my father was actually in the leather trade. And
what did he do in the leather trade?
As far as in the leather trade, I have actually no idea at all, sort of thing. During the actual the war period, when most of the the children's parents or fathers were called up to go into the forces, my father was one of those, which was his job kept him back. So we were very fortunate as children not to always to have our father.
Did your mother work, or was she just looking after the family?
No, my mother actually looked after the children as such.
And was it a comfortable upbringing? I mean, your dad was in steady employment. Were you reasonably well off? What would you say your circumstances
were? No, we was actually born on, I think the actual year that I was actually born, we moved into a brand new council house, which was on a small kind of a state sort of thing, which was more or less edged the playing fields, and it was just open fields from then onwards and things like that.
Now, what about your education? Tell us about your education, your first school and how you go.
Well, my first school was the Hawthorne Road Infant and Junior School. And so I was there till about the 11 years of age. And then we moved on to the, because my mother was a little bit on the religious side as such. And so my elder brother and my elder sister, they were both confirmed in the kind of Church of England school and things like that. And my elder brother, he was kind of a choir boy. And then as such, all the children, we all had to go on the Sunday afternoon. We all had to go to the Sunday school. And eventually I became one of the actual choir boys for a short period. That was until later on when I actually joined the cadets.
So which was your second school?
The second school was it was kind of like a Church of England school. It was called the Parish Church School and things like that. And of course, I was always in the A stream and things like that. So, and also I was kind of very involved in the sport. I always played football and cricket for the school. And even in the second year, I played football and cricket for the school and things like that.
So you were doing well at school. What were your favourite subjects, and perhaps what were your subjects you didn't like?
Well, I think I never had any problems with anything kind of mathematics and histories and geographies and things like that. And when we used to have being a church school, we used to have the Bishop of Peterborough, which the school was part of, and he used to come and he used kind of the prizes and things like that. And I was browsing through some of the books only a few days ago, and I found one of these books, which is kind of one of my prizes, and which was very popular for the children in those days. It was about Biggles, and it's called Biggles in the South Sea, and that there is a big thing in the at the front of the page, you know, Michael White for part of a history, geography, and blah blah blah, and things like that. So my actually schooling were happy days. I never had any problems. I was never under great pressures, you know, kind of because I could not do the sums and things like that. Even in the junior school, we were actually touching,
logarithm.
Not logarithms, the... I can't think of, my mind's gone now, so I think. But anyway, I was quite good at school and things like that. In fact, I suppose, in theory, I was perhaps one of the brainy ones of the family as such.
Now, when did you leave school? I mean, did you leave at 14?
In the schools in those days, the grammar school, they stayed on until they were 15 years of age. But all the other schools, they all kind of, they left at the age of 14 years of age. And then kind of say, when it came to the period of kind of leaving school, I was undecided really what I actually wanted to do. But Northamptonshire, as I said previously, it was mostly boots and shoes and things like that. And before we left school, the school used to take the children to different places, you know, kind of to engineering places, to shoe factories and things like that. And I remember going down to one of these shoe factories, and I watched these people standing there putting three or four nails into a heel of a shoe, and I thought, oh gosh, fancy doing this for about the next 50 years and things like that. And there was also, as well, we had to write an essay after we'd been, things like that, and I came number two. I think the winner would get a pair of shoes, but I was number two, so I didn't get a pair and things like that. So when it actually came to it, my father suggested, why not go into printing sort of thing? Because a very good friend of his who lived about two or three doors down, he went down to see this gentleman and things like that. And so I then was kind of applied to go to this printing firm called Staples Printers. It was
now, we'll come back to that, because I just want to take you back now to the effects of the war on your young life. So we go right back to 1930. Now you were only seven then.
Yeah.
In what ways did the war affect your life growing up between the ages of what, 7 and 14 or something? My maths is dreadful.
Well, the age of 1939, I'd be about 7 years old, I believe, and up to that period, I had not a great recollection of anything kind of those early years, apart from having to go into the local isolation hospital when my sister and myself, we caught scarlet fever of all things and that. But up till there, and then when the war actually started, we then had a large influx of evacuees, especially from the east end of London. And of course, in a place like Kettering, the school children, it had to be split up. There was the local children used to go to the school in the morning, and what we call the evacuees, they went to they used all the church halls and things like that. And then in the afternoon, we used to do this so-called swap. And lots of these evacuees, they were little tearaways, I should say, from kind of the east end of London. And as the local kids sort of thing, I mean, some of them were a little bit scared on, because they were very worldly wise. They knew all about these trams and these big red buses and all these things like that. And of course, when they actually came to a little place like Kettering as such, I mean, they didn't know anything about cows and sheep and all things like that. But I think basically we got on quite well. Now, I do remember that kind of when these evacuees came, these evacuees came round in groups with a lady or gentleman, things like that, to the different households to say that how many persons or children have got in this household. And if so, you've got to take either one or two evacuees and things like that. But in the case with our family, I think we had about, I think it must have been about four children in those days. And my mother said, I've got four children and a husband, and we can't really cope, and we haven't really got the actual room sort of thing, because we only had three bedrooms. And so we never did have any evacuees, although there were lots of evacuees dotted around.
Now, was there any trouble with the evacuees? They were a bit more worldly wise, but did they actually try and bully you at all, or was it reasonably friendly?
Not really. There were no great problems and things like that. In fact, they came quite friendly. And like I say, we went to the schools, we chopped and changed. We went in the mornings and they went in the afternoons, and then we vice versa and things like that. And
how long did they stay?
I think there were two batches that actually came to Kettering. They were the first ones when the first part of the war, when all the trains come. And of course, they turned up with these kind of these cardboard boxes with the gas mask in, and I think they had labels on them. And then the second batch came later on when the doodle bugs were coming in, and that batch seemed to come mostly from around the Croydon area, which is kind of like the Surrey, where I suppose the doodle bugs used to drop short and things like that. And I remember my grandmother, she had a child from Croydon and things like that. And we were all about the same age. But I can't really remember any kind of great problems between and things like that.
Now, what about the question of air raids? I mean, firstly, Kettering's quite out of the way, but on the other hand, there are targets in the area.
Yeah.
Well, did you have to have any air raid precautions that you were aware of?
Oh, yes. So in the actual street we was in, the actual road I was in was called the Oval, because it was a circular kind of things, and a kind of like all the parents, especially the fathers who did not have to go to war sort of thing, they all had to be part of this, used to have a stirrup pumps and all the bits and pieces. And of course my father, such as well, he had to go what they call fire watching in the factory where he was, and they'd stay there till about, I don't know, through the night, so, you know, kind of on the top part of the building in case any of these bombs dropped, especially like incendiary bombs and that. But as far as actually the war in Kettering,
did you have any shelters?
Oh yeah, so we had in lots of the in the actual road itself, sort of thing, they built these brick built solid shelters with kind of like a concrete roofing as such.
Now, what sort of, do you mean a slab, a solid sort of thick slab?
No, they were actually put together with a brick thing. It was as large as, say, this part of the actual room.
So about 10 feet by 14.
And these were actually dotted around on the grass verges, which covered so many, and then certain houses.
I mean the roof. You said
The roof would be concrete, you know, kind of for solidness.
It's a solid slab of concrete.
Well, I suppose how it was actually made. I don't know. I mean, we're talking whether it would go in blocks or whether it would be when the builders did it, whether they actually did it as it'd be about thick as I actually remember.
Three or four inches.
Well, yes, I
can't see. Remember.
Yeah, but. But in some of the shelters, they did have some of these bunks installed in certain streets. And these air raid shelters, the upbuilt ones, they were dotted all around the streets of Kettering as such.
So you didn't have Anderson shelters?
No, our next door neighbour had an Anderson shelter, but because we had small children, because I was only about seven, and because my other brothers and sisters, they were much younger. I remember one was an actual baby, and when it came to gas masks, instead of having the one with the large eyepiece, he had to go into one of these thing where they put like the baby in as such. Now, because we had children, we had what we called a Morrison shelter, which was what is like a table. So we had to remove in, because we had quite a large room, and we used to have this table removed. And I remember my father actually painted it brown, and it used to have this kind of like this caged thing, kind of like the wall parts of it and things like that. It was solid metal, and of course there's children running around as such. You could imagine all the knocks and the things where you bashed your things on it and things like that. But we used it as a table, and we used to have like a tablecloth across the top sort of thing, things like that. Now, as far as I remember kind of like the war period as a child, I suppose it was quite an exciting period, really, because of, we was right on the edge of this town, and next to us was kind of like a playing field, and we had all the Canadians come. I think it was I'm not sure it was the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry. And of course, as children, we used to kind of go through one of my school friends. He's at the top of his guard, and we used to go through the hedge, and we used to kind of crawl underneath. I mean, it was all illegal, but we used to kind of lay underneath the big 3-ton truck sort of thing. We used to watch them all the Canadians all training. And for the children in those days, it was one of the gimmicks. They used to have a belt around your waist sort of thing, and they used to collect all these badges from the different military units and things like that. And this Canadian, it was the first badge I ever collected. I'm sure it was the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry. And so that was the very first one there. Now, also what I actually remember as a child, kind of in the centre of Kettering, as I say, it was only half the size it is now. I do remember the tanks coming down Bowling Green Road. And because with tanks, they've got these tracks and they have the levers to stop it, and they stop one and turn it. And of course, a lot of the tarmac of the road sorting was all getting churned up with these things. So we used to have lots and lots of convoys going, I suppose, from north to south and things like that. And as far as bombs were concerned, now around Kettering, because the soil around the Northamptonshire is kind of this iron ore, and of course they used to have what they call one or two furnaces. There was one at Kettering Furnace, Cransley Furnace, and of course a short distance away we got the large, the town of Corby, which in those days had a steelworks. And of course when it came to the night time, all this kind of this red glow would show up from the planes and things like that. And when the German bombers used to come over, this is what they was after. They were after these kind of these things like that, and also heading towards Coventry, which is only about 30, 40 miles up the road. So they'd use these things perhaps as a spotter and things like that. But Ketchin itself, we only had one or two bombs. I think some of these may be kind of when the British fighters used to chase some of the German planes, and I suppose they used to kind of drop the bombs, you know, to lighten the planes, you know, to get away. And so we had one or two bombs at the different part of the town and things like that, but there was nothing kind of serious. There were one or two towns locally where they had bombs dropped, to Rushden and Wellingborough and places like that. But one of the main things for the children, as I remember, it was an exciting time for the children, because with the war period, you've got all the rationing as such, and of course the children of my era, they had nothing, and the rationing period, it was a great leveller whether there was one child in the family or whether you had 10 children in the family. With the rationing, All the food was more or less basically the same in some ways. With all the point system on the ration books, the larger families did better because they had more teas and
now tell me about the food rationing. I mean, how did it affect you much? Hardly any sweets.
Well, I mean, you've got to appreciate, I was only a child at that time, and of course with the rationing, and of course I don't think children really thought a great deal about kind of like the food as such, because everyone was actually the same. And of course also we had on a council house, we had quite a large garden, and I do remember the parents were encouraged to dig for victory. This was the big posters in those days. So I always remember, although we had quite a large back garden, and my father used to grow all these, you know, vegetables like potatoes and beans and Brussels and things like that, always remember we had quite a large front garden as well, a big lawn and that, and I always remember he dug the whole lot up sort of thing, and we had it all full of potatoes. And so I do remember that. Now, as far as children rationing, I mean, I think we only had 2 ounces of sweets, which was very minimal, and things like that. And of course, all these things which these modern day children have, like crisps and things like that, and bottles of this, but it was just nothing. And so, but then again, children, they'd never had anything else, so it didn't make any difference at all to them. But one of the exciting things for the children locally, as I remember, was all around this period of like Northamptonshire and I suppose Bedfordshire and going out into East Anglia, there were lots and lots of American air bases built. And there was a place called Grafton Under, which was only about 4 miles up the road sort of thing. And so as children, we used to... those of us with like a push bike, we always remember we used to go up there, and we used to kind of leave the push bike actually in the hedge sort of thing, and we used to crawl along the fields. And of course there was no there were guards, I suppose, at the main entrance, but kind of not the guards as you get nowadays at the airfields. And so we used to crawl through there, and we used to lay down there, and there used to be all these flying fortresses everywhere, and there used to be bullets, these cannon shells and all things like that dotted all over the place, because this was the war period. And of course all the children used to collect all these bullets and cannon shells and all things like that. And the ones things we're after, when these planes used to come in, these flying fortresses, sometimes with the one of the engines stopped, you know, where it had been shot up and things like that, used to come down, and they used to fire up these very lights, and like a white parachute used to come out. I don't know what it actually was for, but this is one of the things with the children used to scamper across this airfield and gather all these bits and pieces. And then at school, every so often, we used to have the policemen used to come up. It was used to all the schools, and used because there was a great fear with all these children, with all these mortar bombs and grenades and all things where they collected here, there and everywhere. And so the children used to encourage the children to take all these things in, and it was amazing some of the things that the children used to take in. But after a short period, it was all back to normal again. But the other thing which was quite exciting as well for the children was with all these flying fortresses and liberators and things like that, when they used to come back, because there were these bombardment groups, if I remember it, it was one of the first ones. And when the flying fortresses used to kind of come across, especially they used to do the daylight raids, and you see these planes coming along here, and maybe either one or two of the engines were stopped, and they're all spluttering and things like that. And when they used to come down, then all of a sudden at school, you'd hear this tale about as a flying fortress crashed at so-and-so, and the kids used to jump on their bikes and try to get there before the police did, because in those days there used to be this well sought after things, kind of this aeroplane glass, which is nowadays, which I suppose is quite common, this thick plastic and things like that. In those days it was very sought after because it was strong, and people used to make these rings and all these different shapes, Spitfires out of them, and all things like that. And even now, all these years later, I can still remember a spot over here where this flying fortress crashed and things like that. And then suddenly the police would turn up and they'd turn everyone away because they were frightened about all the plane exploding, you know, because there's all fuel in there. I mean, there was one nasty plane where it actually crashed into a village and things like that. Lots of the households were lost. And another thing which, although it's perhaps about 50 years later sort of thing, I went on to on one of these hot air balloons. We went from a place called Rushden across to the A1 motorway and things like that. And the gentleman in charge of the balloon, he had this Ordnance Survey map and things like that. And as we were going along, we were passing this open countryside, looking down, and there's all these big patches of water. And he said, this is where when the American planes used to come back from the war, when they'd all been shot up and they got to land and they hadn't been able to unload their bombs, they used to jettison these bombs. And this is why these big holes are all now still full of water. And this is all these years after World War had finished as such.
Was the glass perspex that you were collecting?
Well, it was this kind of unbreakable glass. I suppose in the cockpits, you know, when the German fighters, Messerschmitts, used to shoot out and that, and I suppose it used to... It was...
You're not sure. That's fair enough.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you follow the... the war lasted a long time. You were 7 when it started. You'd be 14 nearly when it finished.
Am I possible to continue on?
Oh, yes.
We also reference with the children, because as I was saying about the children, this was the generation of children who had nothing. And so with the Americans here, and of course with the parents away and the British soldiers as such, or their parents, they had very little money and things like that, where the Americans, they came over here and they had all this money, and this is where the girls were after them and things like that. But for the children sort of thing, it was marvellous, because you could go up to the Yanks and say, I got any gum chum? This was the same old tale and that. And of course they'd give you this chewing gum, and you used to have these chalk bars, these Hershey bars and all things like that. And the other wealth sought after thing from the Americans was the American torch, and which is a vertical thing, but the torch thing is on the side, and these were all the children were after and things like that, apart from all the other knickknacks. And also with the actual Americans, because the Americans with their PXs, they used to have all these cigarettes, all used to be in like 200 packs, which was unknown in England in those days. It was more or less these 10 woodbines or something ridiculous like that. And so the children did well, really, you know, kind of. It was an exciting time for them. And
did you follow the progress of the war? I mean, as you got older,
another thing I'd like to mention before, with the Americans, in kind of when you talk about a town like Kettering, which is in the centre part of England, which is, I suppose, reasonably isolated in the 1940s, when the Americans came, there was a certain amount of coloured Americans, black Americans and things like that. And there was a well-known march, which is sometimes put on the BBC when they go in war period, and that a large American group of black Americans, about 4 wide, they all came marching up the main Gold Street, which is one of the main streets of Kettering and things like that. And in those days, children had never, in fact, even the grown-ups had never seen any coloured people and things like that. And it was kind of a new experience. And of course, also in Kettering, because like most of these servicemen, the Americans sort of thing, I mean, they like their drink as much as, I suppose, most people. And so there used to be these certain pubs in Kettering where the white Americans went in and the black ones. And so there were times when there were fights between them. I mean, some of the English people, they were sympathetic towards the, you know, the colours. So they got nothing against them. But with a lot of these Americans at that time, especially from the southern part of America, sort of thing, they were very anti-blacks. They were and things like that. And there used to be some quite heavy fights, and they used to have to call the American MPs and things like that.
Now, so, did you follow the progress of the war? I mean, did you take an interest, you know, with maps
yes,
and things?
Yes.
How did you do it? Through the radio, the newspaper? You were getting older.
In those days, because what we had, like everyone at that era, we just had a small radio, and of course everyone, when it came to the period when the, I can't think of what time it was, the news used to come on, whether it's the 9 o'clock news or the 1 o'clock news, everything stopped and you used to listen to the news, and whether it was propaganda or what have you and things like that, you used to hear all these so-called battles, you know, kind of things were lost in the desert and things like that. And so we used to follow that, and of course all in the national newspapers, they always used to have the maps of, we'll say, of North Africa, of Tripoli and Tobruk and things like that, and also in the Far East and things like that. And so perhaps as a child, I was always interested in that. So although my father never went to war as such, my grandfather did. My grandfather was in most of the battles of World War One and that. And so I always remember, I think my father used to have the Daily Mail. I think it was the Daily Mail or the Daily Express. And so on one day, they had this this map of the Far East. I always remember. And I went down to get this, I think it was three old pence. And it was a large map of the Far East. And I remember Connor with some drawing pins. They were not too happy, my parents, but I had it pinned on the wall. And so when this news used to come in, or when I used to read it in the paper, I used to be able to follow these places like Sumatra and Java and Singapore's and places like that. And it was all that. This was a big coloured map. And so amazingly, was it 50 years later sort of thing, or after the war had actually, or when the war had actually finished, I actually went to the Far East, and where many of these so-called people actually on the on the troop ship going across, I hadn't got a clue where these places were, but I actually knew where Singapore and Hong Kong and places like that, but I did not know where Korea was, because that, on that map it was still part of the Japanese Empire. So I actually did take an interest in the war and things like that. Another thing, as I remember as a child, after the after Dunkirk, I suppose it must have been Dunkirk, that when you used to go into the centre part of Kettering, a lot of these people who had been wounded or hospitalised and things like that, I think they were issued with kind of like a light blue suit, a very light blue and things like that. And quite often you used to see these servicemen, I suppose they recuperate, and they used to sit on the seats outside the library and places like that. And another thing, as I remember as a child, because all children, because we never had these things like these modern day children, we had to find our own interests as such, like the sport, like the footballs and crickets and things like that. And one of the big things for the, especially for the boys, was collecting train numbers. And of course, just below where we are, the main line from St Pancras right up to Glasgow, St Enoch, I suppose it was, all the trains there. And of course, all the children used to collect all these train numbers. And I do remember once there was one of these troop trains coming along, and it was all full of these troops. And I suppose this must have been the period of from Dunkirk, when they're all removing them from the south coast. And I always remember one of these soldiers actually on this train, he threw out this dagger out the window. And I was very envious, really. One of the children, he actually collected this dagger, and I suppose it was one of these Hitler Youth type daggers, you know, things like that. And so I remember kind of the trains, and of course we used to have they had one or two American trains came and things like that, which were a little bit different from our old steam trains.
And what about towards the end of the war? Were there any big street parties in Ireland?
Yes, yes. Street parties. Because we were kind of like not a council estate, we were kind of like a circle road. I think there are about over 100 houses, I suppose, in this circle, because it was called the Oval. And so we then had we had the VE party, and we also had the VJ party. And amazingly, kind of I met of course, I'm 74 years of age now, and I was in Sainsbury's only about a month or so back, and I met a couple of my school friends from yesteryear who were just slightly older than myself, and he said, I've got a photograph of you and your family kind of on the VJ party and things like that.
What were these parties like? Can you describe what they were like to go to as a young kid?
That's your party itself, because in those days there was no traffic on the road, no things. The children could play in the streets, the boys could play football and the whips and tops and all these bits and pieces and play under the lamppost, and So when it came to the actual, I think they had the families had a whip round, you know, who pays so much and things like that. And then they had all these either tables or these things outside, and they're a big long strip right along for all the children. And then they all had, some was like a little bit of a technician, and he had some form of for the music sort of thing, so they could have music there. And I remember we had a big bonfire as well, because on the council estate they had these sections where it's all kind of grass, and it used to be fenced off with railings, and so they had, I always remember they had this big bonfire fire there. But I was saying that when I met these people, so they offered me this photograph. And I thought, how marvellous, really, kind of, where have all these people gone? So I went to, because I worked for a newspaper, I went to the local newspaper and I took this photograph sort of thing. And it was actually reproduced sort of thing. And I had quite a few phone calls and tape back. And I had about four or five people visit this place here, and they wanted copies of this photograph. And, of course, all these people now, they're all in the 70s or even 80s.